and was aware that he had left. But when she walked outside, he was sitting on the steps. And to her surprise, only it was not that surprising, she sat down next to him.
"Whoa," she said. "I may not be able to get up again."
The step was cement, and she felt the chill of it through her pants, though the sun shone down. Charlie shrugged.
"So don't. Let's just sit."
Later, for years to come, Patty would go over it in her mind, there sitting on the steps, how it seemed outside of time. Across the street was the hardware store, and beyond that was a blue house, the side of it lit with the afternoon sun. It was the tall white windmills that came to her mind, how their skinny long arms all turned, but never together, except for just once in a while two of them would be turning in unison, their arms poised at the same place in the sky. Eventually, Charlie said,
"You doing okay these days, Patty?"
She said, "I am. I'm fine," and turned to look at him. His eyes seemed to go back forever. They were that deep. After a few moments, Charlie said,
"You're a Midwestern girl, so you say things are fine, but they may not always be fine."
She said nothing, watching him. She saw how right above his Adam's apple he had forgotten to shave. A few white whiskers were there.
"You sure don't have to tell me what's not fine," he said, looking straight ahead now. "And I'm sure not going to ask. I'm just here to say that sometimes,"
and he turned his eyes back to hers. His eyes were pale blue, she noticed.
"That sometimes things aren't so fine. No siree, Bob. They aren't always fine."
"Oh," she wanted to say, wanting to put her hand on his. Because it was himself he was speaking of, this came to her then. "Oh, Charlie," she wanted to say. But she sat next to him quietly, and a car went by on Main Street, then another. "Lucy Barton wrote a memoir," Patty finally said. "Lucy Barton." Charlie stared straight ahead, squinted. "The Barton kids. Jesus, that poor boy, the oldest kid." He shook his head just slightly.
"Jesus Christ. Poor kids. Jesus H. Christ."
He looked at Patty.
"I suppose it's a sad book."
"It's not. At least I didn't think so." Patty thought about this. She said, "It made me feel better. It made me feel much less alone." Charlie shook his head.
"Oh, no. No, we're always alone."
For quite a while, they sat in companionable silence, with the sun beating down on them. Then Patty said, "We're not always alone." Charlie turned to look at her. He said nothing. "Can I ask you," Patty said, "did people think my husband was strange?" Charlie waited a moment, as though considering this.
"Maybe. I'm the last person around here to know what people think. Sebastian seemed to me to be a good man. In pain. He was in pain."
"Yeah, he was," Patty nodded. Charlie said,
"I'm sorry about that."
"I know you are. The sun splashed brightly against the blue house. After many moments had gone by, Charlie turned again to look at her. He opened his mouth as though about to say something, but then he shook his head and closed his mouth once more. Patty felt, without knowing what it was, that she understood what he was going to say. She touched his arm just briefly, and in the sun, they sat. Cracked. When Linda Peterson Cornell saw the woman who would be staying in their home for the week, she thought, "Oh, this will be the one." The woman's name was Yvonne Tuttle, and she had been brought to the house by another woman from the photography festival, Karen Lucy Toth, who stood silently beside Yvonne as Linda welcomed her. Yvonne was very tall and had slightly wavy brown hair that went to her shoulders. Her face had possibly been quite pretty 10 years earlier. Now there were lines beneath the eyes that diminished their blue gaze, and also Yvonne wore too much makeup for someone who was clearly past 40. Linda was 55. Yvonne's sandals, with high cork wedges, made her even taller. They gave away to Linda the fact that Yvonne had, in her youth, most likely not come from much. Shoes always gave you away. In the garden of Linda and J. Peterson Cornell's house were two sculptures by Alexander Calder, both on one side of the large and bright blue swimming pool. Inside the house, on the walls of the living room, were two Picassos and an Edward Hopper. There was also an early Philip Guston at the end of the sloping hallway that led to the guest area. "Come," Linda directed, and both the other women followed her down the hallway, which swerved around a corner, then led through the long, glass-paneled walkway that finally opened into the guest suite. Linda nodded to the maid to indicate that she could leave. Then Linda waited for Yvonne to say something. Yvonne just kept glancing around, gripping the handle of her wheelie suitcase, and said nothing about the house, which, even if you did not recognize the art on the walls, astonishing for a photographer not to recognize art, was still worth commenting on. The house had been renovated a few years earlier, and what the architect had done was inspired. The guest room was all glass. "Where's the door?" Yvonne finally said. "There is no door," Linda said. She could have told Yvonne that there was no need to worry about privacy, as she and her husband stayed upstairs in the front of the house, and the back garden had no houses overlooking it. But Linda did not say this. Instead, she showed Yvonne the bathroom across the hall, which also had no door, and was in the shape of a V, and had no shower curtain or stall. The shower nozzle simply protruded from the wall. The floor was tilted to take the running water away. "I've never seen anything like this," Yvonne said. And Linda told her that everyone said that. Karen Lucy Toth had continued to stand silently near Yvonne this whole time. She was the most famous of the photographers at the summer festival, and the one who came back every year. Linda knew that Karen Lucy had asked if Yvonne Tuttle could teach a class this summer, and the directors had agreed, although Yvonne's portfolio was not as strong as the festival usually required. But no one at the festival wanted to lose Karen Lucy. The students loved her, and her work was well known. And also, Karen Lucy's husband had thrown himself off the top of the Sheraton in Fort Lauderdale 3 years before. Karen Lucy Toth got a pass on everything, including politeness, Linda thought, because when she said now to Karen Lucy, "I don't believe you've been inside this house before," Karen Lucy, also tall, also with brown hair. They could have been sisters, Linda observed. Only said in her extraordinarily thick Alabama accent, I have not. After that, Yvonne and Karen Lucy went away, and Linda, watching through the kitchen window as they walked down the road, saw them talking intently to each other, and felt sure they were talking about her. Linda was jealous of Karen Lucy Toth. She knew this. It was not a suppressed feeling. Because Karen Lucy was famous, and childless, and still pretty, and because she had no husband. Linda would have liked her own husband, whose intelligence had once impressed her so, to simply disappear. The town hosting the photography festival was a small town about an hour outside of Chicago, with a library and a school and a church and a bright red hardware store that had a row of mason jars in its front window. There were also two cafes and three restaurants and one bar that at night often played live music. The houses near the center of town were large and old and well-kept. Their porches cluttered this time of year with big pots of geraniums and petunias. The trees in town were tall oaks and black walnuts, and the boughs of honey locusts and choke cherries were pendulous, so that when there were no children playing in the park or in the schoolyard, the trees could be heard with their own sound of whispers. And sometimes there was the tinkling sound of ash leaves, too. A private high school that had gone bankrupt years earlier and eventually been forced to close was still available, parts of it, for the classrooms of the photography festival. In order to get to these buildings, you needed to walk through pathways so thick with bushes and tree boughs that houses were only glimpsed as one passed by. It had almost a fairy tale quality to it, the town. Yvonne Tuttle said this to Karen Lucy Toth, and Karen Lucy said she thought that too. They had just arrived at the building where a welcoming reception was being held. Joy Gunterson, the director of the festival, had black ringlets, and she was short and strikingly skinny. She thanked Yvonne for coming, saying that she was happy to include any friend of Karen Lucy Toth's. It seemed to Yvonne that Joy Gunterson's eyes kept looking up toward the ceiling during this conversation, and after Joy walked away, Yvonne told this to Karen Lucy, who said, "Oh, remind me," just as a woman walked up to them, dressed like someone from the 60s with a pillbox hat and a short coat and a little pocketbook that matched her high heels. This woman threw her arms around Karen Lucy, and Yvonne saw that the woman was a man. "I'm crazy about Karen Lucy," he told Yvonne, and Karen Lucy puckered her lips and said, "Dollface, you are just the sweetest little boyfriend I know." "You two look like sisters," the man said. His shaved beard showed through his makeup, and his features were fine, almost perfect in their proportions. "We are sisters," Yvonne answered, "ripped apart at birth." "Savagely," Karen Lucy added. "But we're together now. Look at that sweet pocketbook on your darling wrist." "What's your name?" Yvonne asked. "Thomasina, here. At home, Tom." He gave a graceful shrug, a subdued girlish bounce. "Got it," Yvonne said. Linda did not comment as she got into bed next to her husband, and Jay did not comment either, although it was unusual these days for Linda to watch with him. On the laptop that Jay held against his knees, they both gazed at Yvonne, who had arrived back at the house so late that neither of them had stayed in the living room waiting for her. Now she tossed her keys onto the bed, and her sigh could be heard through the audio. Yvonne put her hands to her hips and looked all around her. Then she went into the bathroom, where the cameras caught her staring so intently at the shower nozzle, which naturally gave the effect of Yvonne staring straight at them, that a shot of fear went through Linda. But Yvonne, surprising to Linda, chose not to shower and only used the toilet instead, washed her face, brushed her teeth, and came back into the guest room, where she stood again, looking through the huge panes of glass that now showed the blackness of night. Finally, she opened her small suitcase and undressed. Her body was more youthful-looking than Linda would have thought, but height could do that for you. Her breasts were still firm-appearing, and her thighs were, in the somewhat grainy light of the camera, smooth. She kept her underpants on and donned a pair of white pajamas that gave her the look, with her hair now in a low ponytail, of someone almost as young as their daughter. But of course she was not. She was a middle-aged woman a long way from her home in Arizona. And she reached for her cell phone, and the ringing sounded quietly through the laptop on Jay's knees. "Talk low," they heard Yvonne say. "I've got you on speakerphone while I unpack. I mean, this guest house, or room, or whatever it is miles away, but you never know. Jeez." "Hey, honey child," unmistakably the voice of Karen Lucy Toth. "You okay?" "No," said Yvonne. Her voice was muffled. She was facing away, pulling things from her suitcase. "It's creepy here, Karen Lucy. How am I ever going to sleep?"
"Take a pill, honey."
"You know, I think I heard they got all their money from his father, who was in plastics."
"What's that mean, I wonder, to be in plastics?"
"The weirdos you're staying with, they're in plastics."
"Can you take a pill, baby doll?"
"Yeah, I will." As Yvonne spoke, she sat on the bed and rummaged through her bag, and Linda and Jay watched her squint at a pill bottle, which she opened. Then she brought from the same bag two small bottles of wine, the type that could be purchased on an airplane. She unscrewed the top from one and tilted it back. "I know you're tired," she said. "I'm really okay." She added, "That Tom, or Thomasina, his wife doesn't mind?"
"Not as long as he does it away from home and without the kids around."
"I'd mind," Karen Lucy said.
"But if you really loved him..."
"Maybe I wouldn't mind. I don't know. I honestly don't know. Good night. I love you."
"Love you too, baby."
Linda glanced at her husband's profile. She said, "She didn't even shower, and she traveled all day." Jay put a finger to his lips and nodded. Linda rose then and left the room to sleep across the hall, as she always did. Ever since her daughter moved away, saying those awful things about her, Linda had slept away from her husband. 7 years earlier, a young woman in town had disappeared. She was a sophomore in high school and a cheerleader, and also she babysat for the families of the Episcopalian Church of which her family was a member. So there were many people to investigate. And of course, the town was in dreadful distress. A deep resentment of the media, which swarmed the town with an almost biblical descent of cameras and large furry microphones and trucks with huge satellite dishes that scooped at the air. The resentment of this united most people. But then strange alliances formed and ruptured, according to what theory was popular that day. For example, when the driver's ed teacher was thought to be a suspect, that really divided people. And then there were a few who said the girl had actually run away, that nobody knew the terrible things that took place in her home. And this added to the dismay and horror that her poor parents and siblings endured. For 2 years, the town lived this way. During this time, Linda Peterson Cornell existed with a confusing disk of darkness deep inside her chest. And as she watched her husband read the news reports and follow the case on TV, she often broke out in a sweat. She thought she had to be crazy. She could not imagine why her body was reacting this way, why her mind itself could not stay calm. And then when it was over, finally, finally over, she forgot that she had felt this way. Only occasionally would she remember, but never with the visceral aspect of what she had actually gone through. And each time she remembered, she thought, "I'm a silly woman. I have nothing to complain about. Not really. Not like that. Jesus God." The second night of the festival, Linda sat reading in the living room with her husband, and Yvonne came through the front door and walked past them down the ramp to the lower floor. She flapped a hand as she went by. "Good night," she called.
"But how are you?" Jay called back. "How's the teaching going?"
"Fine," this was said from downstairs. "Got an early class. Good night," she called again. They could hear the very faint sound of the shower, not long, and they sat reading in the living room for another 2 hours. In the middle of the night, through the shield of her sleeping pill, Linda was aware of her husband in the shower. It was not unusual, particularly, but it gave Linda a sense of unease. It always did. And tonight reminded her of what she had felt 7 years before. Just the relief of that time now being over allowed her to fall back into sleep. Each night, Karen, Lucy, and Yvonne went to the bar that played live music. Each night they asked Thomasina if he wanted to go with them, and each night Thomasina said no, he was going back to his room to call his wife and his kids, and to read over the assignments for the next day.
"He's not a bad photographer," Karen Lucy told Yvonne. "If he loved it with his whole heart, he might be really good. But he doesn't love it with his whole heart. He just comes here because..."
They nodded simultaneously, picking at the corn chips in the basket on the table.
"Bless his soul," Karen Lucy added. "Totally. And his wife's, too." "Hell yeah."
Karen Lucy put a hand to her mouth.
"Evie, I was betrayed. Betrayed. I want you to know that."
Yvonne nodded.
"That's all I'm going to say."
Yvonne nodded again.
"My heart is broken," Karen Lucy said.
"I know that," Yvonne said.
"Broken. He broke my heart."
Karen Lucy flicked a corn chip, and it flew across the table. After a number of minutes went by, Yvonne asked, "Why do Joy's eyes roll around when she's talking to me?"
"Oh, 'cause her son killed a girl here years ago and buried her in the backyard. And then finally told his mama." "Yes, darling, I am serious."
Karen Lucy nodded.
"He's in prison now for the rest of his life, however long or short that may be. Joy and her husband got divorced, and her husband got all the money. They were rich, but he got all the money. And Joy lives in a trailer now outside of town, and if you go there, you will see a photograph she has on her mantle, taken of her standing right next to her son. And she has her hand on his chest in this gesture of affection, but it covers up the numbers on his uniform, so the photograph looks like he's just wearing a dark blue shirt. God, Yvonne said. My God!
I know.
How old was he when he did this? 15, I think. 16? They charged him as an adult because he didn't tell anyone for almost 2 years. Just left her buried in their backyard. If he'd told, he wouldn't have gotten life. But he got life. Without parole. A dog didn't dig up the body? No, ma'am. That did not happen. I guess he buried her deep enough.
Karen Lucy held up two fingers.
2 years! And he says, Mama, I got to tell you something.
What happened to the family of the girl?
They moved. Joy's ex-husband left too. Won't have anything to do with his son at all. Wiped his hands clean. Joy goes every month to see her boy in Joliet.
Yvonne shook her head slowly, drew her fingers through her hair.
Phew, she said.
After a long silence, Karen Lucy said, I'm awful sorry you never had your kids, Evie. I know you wanted kids so bad.
Well, said Yvonne, you know, you'd have been a good mama. I do know that.
Yvonne looked at her friend.
It's life. It's all just friggin' life.
Yes, it is, Karen Lucy said. Yes, it is.
The next morning, which was 3 mornings after she had first arrived, Yvonne Tuttle approached Linda at the kitchen sink. Linda had not known Yvonne was still in the house, and she was startled to find the woman standing behind her as she washed her coffee cup.
Have you seen my white pajamas?
Yvonne asked with direct curiosity.
Why would I have seen your pajamas?
Linda placed the coffee cup in the drainer.
Well, because they're missing. I mean, they're just gone. And things don't just go. If you see what I mean.
I don't.
Linda dried her hands on the dish towel.
Well, I mean, my white pajamas that I put each morning beneath my pillow are gone.
Yvonne made a sign with her arms like an umpire calling it safe.
Gone. And they have to be somewhere, so I thought I'd ask. I mean, maybe the maid took them to wash them or something.
The maid did not take your white pajamas.
Yvonne looked at her for a long moment.
Huh,
she said. Linda felt fury rising in her, almost uncontrollable.
We do not go stealing things in this house.
I was just asking, Yvonne said. During the last weekend of the festival, a show was mounted in the same room at the former private high school where the welcoming reception had been. On one side were the faculty photographs, and on the other were student photographs. Yvonne stood with Karen Lucy and Thomasina off to the side, watching people move slowly around the room.
I hate this, Yvonne said.
Thomasina switched his pocketbook to his other wrist.
Karen Lucy, do you get used to people staring at your photographs? Look at the way that woman there is tilting her head. She's wondering, wondering what the cracked plates in your photos mean.
Karen Lucy said, they mean I'm cracked up.
Thomasina smiled with deep affection at Karen Lucy.
You crack me up, he said.
Sweetheart, I want to take you home. You know, that lady's a rich culture vulture. I can just tell by the back of her head.
Shittin' in high cotton, that girl. Just buy the damn thing.
Karen Lucy turned away.
Oh, God, she's the woman whose house I'm in, said Yvonne.
Ooh, let's go.
Karen Lucy said,
right now, baby doll.
The sun was very bright, and they all three stood for a moment on the wooden porch, squinting. Thomasina reached for his sunglasses.
It's hot, he said. I didn't know it was so hot outside. I have my nylons on.
They look nice, Yvonne said.
You look nice.
Doesn't he always just look so nice?
Karen Lucy made a kissing sound in Thomasina's direction.
Lord, it is hotter than two rabbits screwing in a wool sock.
A man's voice startled them from behind.
Girls and boys, it said.
It was J. Peterson Cornell. He had just stepped through the door they had walked through.
Had enough of your exhibit? He asked.
He held out his hand toward Karen Lucy.
I'm Jay, he said,
and for a moment the sunlight glinted on his glasses. Then his eyes came into view.
A real pleasure to meet you. Love your work.
Thank you, Karen Lucy said.
Can I get you girls something cool to drink?
Karen Lucy said,
we have an appointment, I'm afraid.
I see.
Jay turned in the direction of Yvonne.
We haven't seen much of you this week. Have you enjoyed yourself in our little town? Or do you find it dull compared to the funky scene of Tucson?
I like your little town.
Yvonne felt sweat run down her back.
Come on, y'all. Nice to meet you, Mr. J.
Karen Lucy moved to the steps, and Yvonne and Thomasina followed. The three of them walked single file through the pathway in the woods that led back toward town, and none of them spoke until they came to a clearing by the church.
I need a drink, said Yvonne.
In the bar, Thomasina said,
he didn't even acknowledge me, did you notice?
Course not, honey, said Karen Lucy. He ain't gonna acknowledge anyone he can't do.
I don't know why he makes me feel creepy, said Yvonne.
Because he is creepy, I'm telling you.
Karen Lucy pointed her swizzle stick at Yvonne.
It's not like he looks creepy. He looks normal.
Yvonne picked up a chip, put it back into the basket. Karen Lucy let out a long sigh.
For 100 years I waitressed in my youth, and child, I got to know some things. I got to know men's eyes.
Karen Lucy tapped the swizzle stick to her cheekbone.
And this man, baby doll, thinks you are a big old tall piece of trash. That's what he thinks. He'd think the same about me, but I've won some awards, and he'd rather hang me on his wall. And when you win your awards, and you will, Evie, he'll want you on his wall, beside his fucking freezing cold Picasso. But right now, he is sniffing your panties and tucking your pretty white pajamas under his pillow each night.
Yvonne gave small nods.
Thank you,
she added. I'm serious.
I know you're serious.
Whoa, said Thomasina. This is sad stuff I'm hearing.
Karen Lucy looked at Thomasina's profile with a serious, hard look. Then she put her hand on his and said,
you ought to worry about nothing. You are doing just fine.
Linda and J. Peterson Cornell sat in the living room, waiting up to speak to their houseguest.
Every night, she had come in later and later, and when she came in, she always said, "Hello, good night," and kept right on walking down the ramp in her wedge-heeled sandals. The night after Jay and Linda had been to the exhibit, Jay said, "She doesn't give us the time of day." Without looking at him, turning the page of her magazine, Linda said, "When I first saw her, I thought maybe you'd run off with her." Jay laughed. "Did you? Because of her slightly slutty kind of working-class look?"
"I don't think it's just a look," Linda said.
"No, clearly not." Linda should have sensed. She did sense her husband's heightened state. She did not watch with him again the view of Yvonne in the bedroom or the bathroom. She did not mention to him that Yvonne had reported her white pajamas missing. On the last night of Yvonne's stay, Linda sat with him in the living room, and toward midnight, Yvonne came in.
"You've been burning your candle at both ends," Jay called out to her.
"I have been. Sleep well,"
Yvonne called back, disappearing down the ramp.
"Would you come here for a moment, please?"
Jay called. He stayed sitting, and Linda sat next to him, holding a newspaper open on her lap. After a moment, Yvonne came back up the ramp.
"Yes?"
she said.
"Have you a family?" Jay asked her. "Are you divorced?"
"Am I divorced?"
"That's what I asked."
"Well, geez." Yvonne put a hand to her forehead.
"There's a conversation starter. Is that the first thing you usually ask middle-aged women when you meet them?"
"You look divorced," Jay said.
Yvonne shook her head quickly in tiny gestures.
"Okay, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to bed." "You've stayed in our house for more than a week," Linda said, "and you've never once had a conversation with us. You'll understand if we feel rebuffed. We opened our home to you."
"Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm sorry."
This seemed to have hit home, and Linda sensed immediately how little confidence the woman really had. How her mother had probably tried to bring her up right. But a desperation was inherited. Yvonne stepped into the living room.
"I didn't mean to be rude. I've just been really tired each night."
"Sit,"
Jay said pleasantly, nodding toward a chair. The woman sat. Her legs were very long, and the chair she sat in was low to the ground, so her knees stuck up like a cricket's. Linda could see she was uncomfortable, and Linda was not sorry.
"So, tell us, you live in Arizona. Have you lived there long?"
Linda asked.
"Yeah," said Yvonne. "Basically, you know, most of my adult life."
"Our daughter was thinking of moving to New Mexico, but she went east instead," Jay said, smiling. "She lives in Boston now."
"Yeah? How old is she?"
"She's 23, and very much enjoying her independence from us. It's natural at that age."
Jay was still smiling.
"She has a twin brother who lives in Providence, and he's enjoying his independence as well," he added.
"Karen Lucy has done some wonderful work recently," Linda said.
"Hasn't she?"
Yvonne sat forward, but her knees were too high, so she had to sit back and stretch her legs out, and she looked undeniably inviting.
"The whole earthquake series. I think she's brilliant. Those cracked plates."
Yvonne shook her head appreciatively, tried sitting up straight again.
"Some artists are so competitive, even with their friends," Jay said. "But I guess you can be generous since your own work's been successful.
And rightly so, might I add.
I'm sure you're just generous anyway, Linda said. She thought Yvonne looked wary. Let me get us some wine, she said.
There was no doubt about what she felt. Jay had had his successes before, but Linda had never felt as complicit. In another 20 minutes, Linda excused herself and went to bed. She listened intently, and fairly soon she heard Yvonne going downstairs and walking through the walkway to her room. The door to her husband's room shut quietly, and Linda took her sleeping pill. Somewhere in a dream, Linda heard screaming. The sound was terrifying.
Honey, said Jay. He was speaking to her from the doorway, and her bedroom light was on. There's been a little issue.
Sitting up quickly, she was certain she heard the doorbell ring. She said,
Jay, I was just dreaming.
Let me do the talking, Jay said.
He smiled at her, but she thought he looked different, as though his face was broader than she had noticed before, and his face was moist with perspiration. She put on her robe and followed him downstairs. When he opened the door, two policemen stood there. Linda saw behind them another policeman and also a policewoman, and in the driveway, the two white police cars. The policemen were very polite.
Can you show us where the guest room is? Where you had the guest Yvonne Tuttle staying?
Jay said,
Of course. Linda, take them down.
Linda's mouth was extremely dry as she turned to go down the ramp to the guest area. The bedroom was in darkness, and as Linda started to enter, her hand reaching for the light switch, the policewoman stopped her, saying, No, please leave everything. And the policeman said, Mrs. Peterson, why don't you go back upstairs now? Linda turned quickly, calling out for Jay. Jay was shaking his head slowly as the policemen stood in the kitchen with their arms at their sides.
We thought she seemed odd from the very beginning. But I'm sure you understand I don't care to discuss any more of this without speaking to my lawyer. I'm represented by Norm Atwood, and you know what he'll say. This is outlandish, entirely ridiculous. I don't imagine the county looks forward to a lawsuit from me.
One of the policemen said,
Why don't you ask him to meet us at the station? Honestly,
Jay smiled.
I know you folks pride yourselves on being meticulous, but this is just outrageous.
Where's Yvonne?
Linda suddenly asked as the men were gathering by the door.
She's at the county hospital, ma'am, said one of the policemen. She says I tried to rape her,
Jay added.
Yvonne? She did? But that's insane, Linda said.
Of course it's insane, Jay said calmly. Honey, I'll be back soon.
The policewoman stayed behind with one of the policemen. Linda said,
What are you doing?
Have a seat, Mrs. Peterson. We'd like to ask you a few questions. They were very polite. They asked about Yvonne. What was she like?
Oh, horrible, Linda said.
In what way?
She was rude to us, never spending time with us.
Linda suddenly remembered about the pajamas and blurted that out, too.
She accused me of stealing her pajamas.
The policewoman nodded sympathetically while the policeman wrote something down.
And was she rude to your husband as well?
Too late, Linda realized that she should have said nothing. They were very nice to her when she said she was not going to talk to them anymore.
They explained that a search warrant was being obtained for the guest room, that evidence might be taken, possibly the sheets, pillowcases, things like that. The next morning, Jay slept heavily in their bedroom. Toward dawn, Norm Atwood had brought him home. Jay had been charged with third-degree battery and released on bond. Norm explained that Jay had most likely been charged because Yvonne was in such a condition of hysteria, running down the road at 3 a.m. in underpants and a t-shirt, then knocking on a door in town, and that there was a small bruise on her wrist that could conceivably indicate a struggle. Norm said the state would still have difficulty proving it was not an encounter of consent, that it was always hard to prove, with no witnesses, the matter of consent. Now Linda sat motionless in the back garden beside the glaring blue swimming pool. In her pocket, her cell phone rang, and she clicked it on. Her daughter said, "Fuck you, Mom. Just fuck you both. I'm never coming home again." Linda rose and went inside to the living room and sat on the far end of the couch. She felt a little bit out of body because she had a sensation of being young again, walking down a road on an early summer evening with schoolgirl friends, past fields and fields of corn and fields of soybeans, the whole world filled with the bright green of new life, the sun setting so that the entire sky was colored in glorious celebration. The air on her bare arms, she recalled, too. All freedom, all innocence, the laughter. Norm Atwood had arranged an appointment for her in the afternoon to drive to Layton to see her own lawyer. She had marital privilege, he explained. She didn't have to testify against Jay about anything he had told her. But anything she had seen, she would be put on the stand to report under oath. Linda tried to understand this as she sat on the couch, but she felt that all parts of her had stopped. She was in neutral. She looked about her. The Hopper painting hung on the wall with an indifference so vast, it began to feel personal, as though it had been painted for this moment. "Your troubles are huge and meaningless," it seemed to say. "There is only the sun on the side of a house." She got up and moved into the dining room, sitting at the long table. A few years earlier, her daughter had found something on her father's computer, and the girl had screamed and screamed and screamed. "Dad screws women right in the house, and you do nothing? You're more pathetic than he is, Mom. You make me sick." It had started as a private game, a way of breaking domestic boredom, creating a Linda Peterson Cornell that seemed daring, provocative, a person her husband appreciated more. While Linda was growing up in northern Illinois, her father had managed a successful feed corn farm. Her mother, a homemaker, had been a scattered woman, but kind. Their last name was Nicely, and Linda and her two sisters were known as the Pretty Nicely Girls. It was a pleasant childhood. And then her mother, suddenly, so suddenly it seemed to Linda to happen while she was at school one day, moved out and into a squalid little apartment, and it was the most terrible thing Linda could imagine. Worse than if her mother had died. After a few months, her mother wanted to return home, but Linda's father refused to allow it. And the image of her mother living alone in a tiny house, after the squalid apartment, and having given up her friends, all of whom reacted with fear as though her mother's attempts at freedom might be contagious,
terminal, along with the estrangement of her daughters because their father pulled their loyalty to him. All this was, by far, the strongest event in Linda's life. The week after Linda graduated from high school, she married a local boy named Bill Peterson. Then she divorced him 1 year later, keeping his name. In college in Wisconsin, she met Jay, who, with his intelligence and vast money, seemed to offer a life that might catapult her away from the terrifying and abiding image of her mother alone and ostracized. Now, as Linda sat at the end of the dining room table, the doorbell rang, though at first she wasn't sure she had heard right. It rang again. She peeked through the curtains and did not see anyone, so she opened the door cautiously, and it was skinny Joy Gunterson saying, "Linda, I just had to come over." Linda said, "No, you didn't. No, you did not. You have nothing in common with me. Do you hear? You have nothing in common with me. Go away." "Oh, Linda, but I do. I'm not going to end up living in some trailer, Joy." It amazed her that she said this. No part of her had any inkling she would say that. It seemed to amaze Joy, too. The woman, shorter than Linda, had a look of confusion shift onto her face. Probably this mutual surprise prevented Linda from closing the door, so Joy had time to shake her head and say, "Oh, but Linda, see, it doesn't matter where you live. That's what you find out. When the person you love more than anyone spends his days in a cell, then you're in a cell too. It doesn't matter where you are. You'll find out who are your real friends. They won't be who you think. Trust me on that." Linda closed the door and locked it. She went to the door of Jay's bedroom, but he was still fast asleep and snoring, lying flat on his back. Without glasses, his face seemed naked. She had not seen him sleeping for some time. She closed the door and went back downstairs. She did not know what she would say to this lawyer. Norm had said it also depended on whether or not Yvonne continued to want to press charges. A lot depended on Yvonne. Linda walked around the house quietly. She understood that her mind was trying to take in something it could not take in. She thought of Karen Lucy Toth, who must be with Yvonne right now. The police had come to collect Yvonne's things and return them to her. Linda had not asked where Yvonne was. In the kitchen sink were two white mugs with coffee stains. Linda couldn't say who had been drinking coffee, how they'd got into the sink. As she washed them, her legs almost gave way. She pictured jurors sitting in a jury box. She pictured Yvonne, with her too much makeup, on the stand. And then she thought of the cameras. Why in the world had she not thought of the cameras? Did you, or did you not, watch women with your husband while they undressed, showered, used the toilet? How long had you been aware that your husband was watching them this way? Driving toward Layton, Linda stopped at a gas station a few miles outside of town. She felt horribly exposed, and so did not pull into the self-serve dock, but instead had a man fill up her tank. But then she suddenly had to use the bathroom. With her sunglasses on, she went into the store, past the rows of cellophane-wrapped donuts and cakes and peanuts and candy. The filth of the bathroom appalled her. She could not remember the last time she had used a public restroom this filthy. And she thought,
Why should it matter when now nothing matters? Her mind was scrambled like that. So when she walked back through the store and bumped straight into Karen Lucy Toth, they stared at each other with amazement. Karen Lucy was also wearing sunglasses. She removed them, and her eyes, to Linda, seemed older than Linda would have thought, and sad, and still pretty.
"You scared me," Linda said.
"Well, you scared me, too." They moved together down the aisle away from the foot traffic. Tall Karen Lucy spoke down. "Ma'am, as God's truth, after my own tragedy a few years back, I feel sometimes that I have compassion for everyone. I do. It's probably the only blessing that came from that. But your husband scared my friend. He scared her bad."
"Where is she?"
"I just took her to the airport. She needs to get home and see a proper doctor."
"Listen," Linda said, "I have no idea about any of it."
Karen Lucy's pretty eyes got small. "No, now you listen to me. Don't you go pissing down my back and then tell me it's raining outside. You have to know something about your husband. And if Evie takes this to trial, and I hope to hell she will, you will be called to testify, and it is your duty."
"I don't know anything about my husband," Linda said coldly.
Through her sunglasses, she watched Karen Lucy look out the window as though looking far into the distance. Linda saw the pretty eyes redden. Karen Lucy nodded slowly. Quietly, she said, "Oh, child, of course. I am so sorry." She turned her gaze toward Linda, though her focus still seemed far away.
"I am in no position to tell anyone how they ought to be cognizant and aware of what their husband is up to. I have thrown stones in a glass house, and I am sorry."
Almost always, it's a surprise, the passing of permission to enter a place once seen as eternally closed. And this is how it was for a stunned Linda, who stood that day in that convenience store with the sun falling over packages of corn chips, and heard those words of compassion, undeserved, for if Karen Lucy had not known her husband's state of mind, Linda knew her own husband's state of mind too well, and sensed in them what would turn out to be true. That Yvonne Tuttle and Karen Lucy would never return to town. There would be no trial, no mention of cameras, and Linda would live with her husband in a state of freedom, because he would always know, as they watched the news at night, took walks through the countryside, or sat in a restaurant and chatted, that his exemption from trouble was possibly or partly the result of his wife's discretion. And there would be no more women after that. The guest room, perhaps a sunny study, neither would enter. A photograph of Karen Lucy's cracked plates on the wall. The essence of this, Linda felt that day. She removed her sunglasses to stare into the eyes of this woman. She wanted to reach for her hand. She even wanted, with a sudden, surprising urgency, to caress her cheek, as though Karen Lucy were the pretty, nicely girl who had suffered the blow from behind, who had come home from school and found her mother gone, thinking she had been important, loved all along.
the hit thumb theory. Waiting for her to arrive, Charlie McCauley watched from the window as twilight began.